Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Chris Ranji, Amy Mark Scores with you on a Monday, and joining us now, as he does and will continue to do
until
every
he's
Monday,
tired of our
until
crap.
He gets sick of it,
he might,
is Chris Saliza, political commentator and author of the daily newsletter, So What? Chris, it's good to talk to you today.
Hey, guys, I've been meaning to talk to you about something. This is awkward.
It's just not working out. No, you know what you do? It's 2025, Chris. You know what you do? You just stop responding. That's what people do now.
They ghost.
They don't say, they ghost. They don't say, hey, this isn't working out.
I thought you were going to say slap a tariff on it, like every time we talk to you.
Okay.
I will embarrass my older son that, like, a couple years ago, I found out that he had a girlfriend after they had already broken up. I was like, okay.
And you're telling us the news?
Exactly. It's a little worrisome.
You know, you are. I think you're Jason Bateman from Arrested Development.
Oh, my gosh.
Michael's, he's dating
Michael Bluth.
Yes, his kid's dating the yeah. Michael Cera.
Yeah.
His character's dating Anne.
Of course.
And he's like, who's that again?
Yeah. I actually do think I think it would be great to have like a breaking news newsletter that is just the headlines from a month ago, and you're just like, I don't know if anybody saw this. You're just a little bit behind.
I will note this. Like, I think of this all the time. There's as it relates to Donald Trump, and I think this is probably an okay place to kick off our conversation, honestly. So there's an episode of The Simpsons, the cartoon that's been on Fox for a million years. And Mr. Burns is the kind of like curmudgeonly billionaire. He's very sickly. He goes to the doctor one time, and the doctor comes back and he says, Mr. Burns is like, oh, I guess I got a good report. And the doctor says, no, actually, you have every disease known to man and a few that we've just discovered in you, but you're not sick because of Three Stooges syndrome, which is they all are stuck at the door of your body and none of them can get through. And I do think there is an element of like Three Stooges syndrome with Trump, which is he is saying and doing so much that it's just really, really hard for any one thing to break through. And I do, by the way, think that is strategic and purposeful on their part, but it absolutely is effective.
So politically, yeah. How is this going to play for him? The tariffs are set to take, they're supposed to take effect tomorrow, but he has reached a deal with Mexico to delay those tariffs, mm-hmm. but those with Canada and China are supposed to happen tomorrow. In terms of politics and in Washington, how do you think this is going to end up playing?
Well, I always say that the truth of the matter is that there's no way that the average person in America knows, number one, what a tariff is, mm-hmm. and B, what a tariff's impact would be on their life. It effectively will raise prices, right? The prices will be raised on companies in America, and they will pass those prices on to the consumer. I don't think people really know that at this point. And candidly, guess what people don't like, no matter who is president? Passing along costs, paying more for everyday things. It's one of the reasons that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris lost. So, you know, I think that Donald Trump's best use of tariffs is as a negotiation tool. The Mexico result, 10,000 troops, Mexican troops being surged to the border, that's a good result for him because he does not have to impose tariffs on Mexico, which would raise prices in this country. And he can say, see, we got something that we want. The issue is if a country is not willing to play ball, then the tariff goes into effect. And then I think that hurts. Yes, a tariff against Chinese goods would hurt China, but it would also hurt the United States. I mean, make no mistake about it. And so I think he wants to use it as a good negotiation tactic. The problem is in any negotiation, there are at least two parties involved. And if one of them isn't on board with, oh, okay, we're going to cut a deal, it could be problematic for him politically.
Yeah, and you talked about just like how tariffs work, and I think, you know, I don't know what the average American knows about tariffs or knows that it's the American businesses that pay the tariff. It's the American individuals, because it sounds like Mexico's paying the tariff, but that's not who pays it. It's the American businesses and the American individuals, and then they can and probably will pass that cost on along to the consumer to make up for that loss. It's basically to discourage, right, Americans working with those companies or countries and not staying within the country itself.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think in an ideal world, what it does is it says we need to, for example, build and make more things in America. And Donald Trump said on the campaign trail, look, we're going to put these tariffs in place, and then all these companies are going to move from out of the country into the United States. You know, that was always far-fetched, right? The practical everyday impact of a tariff is the things that you buy, particularly when we're talking about our three biggest trading partners, right? China, Mexico, and Canada. The things that you buy, if these tariffs go into effect, which is an if they go into effect, is it will cost you more to do these things. It's just a fact. If Joe Biden was president and he put these tariffs in, if Barack Obama was president, if George W. Bush, and yes, if Donald Trump, it's just we've never seen the threat of these sort of broad-based tariffs outside of sort of a crisis moment, a war, something like that, where it's like, okay, well, we need to build our manufacturing sector. We need to put policies in place that force people to build in America because we're at war or we're in a crisis. That's not where we are currently, and that's why I think people don't. I just don't think. I looked at Google search data just before I came on here. If anyone can do this, but if you go to Google Trends and type in tariff, the what is a tariff search has gone up about 2,500% in the last 24 hours.
Wow.
Well, because most people haven't talked about it since Smoot Hawley in sixth grade, or when they watched Ferris Bueller, which also talked about Smoot Hawley.
Exactly. That's where I learned about it.
So Chris Saliza, political commentator, is with us every Monday at 11 o'clock. His daily newsletter is called So What? You can see him on YouTube. You have seen him on CNN with The Washington Post. Right now, the Democratic Party seems to be a bit of a mess, Chris. Clearly, they did not do well in November. They are not in control of just about anything in Washington as we speak right now. Does it appear to you they have a direction? Because it does not appear they're unified on one.
No, they do not. I would note it was not a big news story, but they did choose a new leader over the weekend near Washington in Maryland, but very close to D.C., named Ken Martin, who has been the longtime chairman of the Minnesota Democratic Party. He won over the guy who had been the Wisconsin Party chairman. So I listened. The guy who won's name is Ken Martin. Now, I didn't know a whole heck of a lot about him, if I'm being honest, but I listened to sort of what he said in the wake of his victory. And if I was a Democrat focused on winning back the White House in 2028, it would worry me, because what he said is, we are going to go lower. I'm paraphrasing, but only by very little, that we need to get in the mud with Donald Trump. The reason that Democrats lost was not for brand issues or any issues with message. It was just that we didn't match Donald Trump's willingness to sort of define downward what people want in politics. I have seen person after person, Republican and Democrat, in the last decade say, here's all we need to do. We just need to out-Trump Trump. It never has worked, which I guess doesn't mean it could never work, but I will tell you it has never worked, because Donald Trump is held to a different and lower standard by the public than anyone else in politics. And so I that would worry me if I was a Democrat, because I don't think the solution is to be more like Trump in order to win elections. But I do think you're right that there is a look. I think they are stunned. I think Donald Trump, not only winning the election, but then what he's done since he's come into office, you know, it's been 2 weeks as of today. I think it has stunned them. I think it has put them on the back foot. I don't think they know how to react.
Chris, there's a really interesting piece in The Atlantic a month or two ago by David Brooks, How the Ivy Leagues Broke America. And yes. It talks about that shift from the Democratic Party, from being the party of the working class, to being the party of the academic elite. And I know the Smirkonish podcast talked about how, and I'm forgetting the guy who wrote What's the Matter with Kansas, how he said he knew Democrats were going to lose when he walked into an art museum and it was all about settler colonialism. And yep. David Brooks points out that this move to this highly educated elite Democratic Party and why we're seeing a rise in populism in, you know, in countries in Europe as well as in the United States is that these leaders, like these populist leaders like Trump, understand that, and he says this, that working class people resent the know-it-all professional class with their fancy degrees more than they do billionaire real estate managers or rich entrepreneurs. So even though Trump is an elite, he's a different kind of elite than what David Brooks calls the know-it-all class.
Absolutely. I think that nails it. It is amazing to me. I'm now old enough. I'm almost 50. I'm old enough to remember when Democrats were sort of the party of the little guy, you know, and that is totally flip-flopped where Republicans have become that. And I do think, look, I think there was a rise in the idea, and it still permeates in plenty of liberal circles, this idea that if only you read as much as we did, if only you were as smart as we were, you would agree with us, too. The reason that you don't agree with us is because you're ill-informed or dumb. Well, guess what? Like, that's not really a winning message. I mean, I don't think you have to be a political scientist to say calling people dumb is a problem. And I do think, for me, I think Democrats need to go out into the middle of America, hold a bunch of listening sessions with people, Democratic elected officials who have been elected in rural areas, and just listen and say, look, we understand you don't like what we're doing right now, but we can have solutions that you do like, and we want to hear from you and then start to build from there. This idea that they're going to build by kind of walling themselves off on platforms like Blue Sky, or they're going to turn off all TV except for MSNBC. I just think that's a gigantic mistake. That's how they got into this situation where the Democratic brand is so badly damaged.
There's this thought process, though, that at least this is how I think they look at it, that if they don't embrace the people more so on the left, they're not going to motivate those people to come out and vote for them. And if they don't get them to come out and vote, they're not going to win. Is that
absolutely?
So is that a problem for them?
You know, I think so. What's hard is when you don't have a sort of leader, you don't have a person who's kind of steering the ship, and everyone recognizes that person is steering the ship, even if they don't agree with it, maybe every turn the person takes. It's hard because there's a lot of voices saying a lot of different things. Look, Barack Obama, he slaughtered some sacred cows within the Democratic Party, but the left was willing to accept it because overall they believed him to be for them, right? And Hillary Clinton did less a good job of that. Joe Biden did less a good job of that. Kamala Harris did less of a good job of that. It's hard, but it's usually around a single person because you're right. Without the Democratic base, Democrats aren't going to win any elections. At the same time, with only the Democratic base, Democrats aren't going to win any elections. I mean, so that's the issue I find. It's like you can't really have one without the other, but a lot of it has to do with a person who people sort of trust to look out for their best interests. It's hard when it's just kind of the party speaking as like the Borg about like what we're going to do, because there just isn't a singular or even a handful of voices right now. Like if I said, name the leader of the Democratic Party right now, we'd probably come up with 8 to 10 different answers. And that's an issue for them.
Chris Ciliza, political commentator. His daily newsletter is called So What? It is, you can catch him on YouTube as well. Like I said before, you've seen him on CNN. He's been with the Washington Post. He's been all over, and he's with us every Monday at 11 o'clock. You can also follow him on Twitter at Chris Ciliza. Chris, thank you again. We will talk to you next Monday.
Next Monday. Can't wait. Thank you all.
Unless you ghost us.
I will be here.
Yeah.
I will be here and ready.
All right. Perfect.
All right, thank you, Chris. Take care, all. Okay.
That Chris Saliza with us. Again, the daily newsletter is called So What? That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji on KMOX. Shake up in the Cardinals television broadcast booth. There's no shake up in the radio booth. It is stable and it is good. And you should be listening to Cardinals baseball here on KMOX and Odyssey app.
You mean there's people who don't?
I can't imagine
Why?
Anybody is out there who's not listening to John Rooney and Rick Horton
that is
and
insane.
Mike Claiborne. It's,
you know,
it's literally crazy.
And
if
you
you're
say,
not.
I want to watch the Cardinal game, well, you can, but you mute it.
Yeah, you can listen
and
to.
And then you pause it and you sync up the broadcast. That's what we do.
And you can listen on your phone for free with the Odyssey app, AUDACY. But on the television side, Jim Edmonds is out.
He is
no longer going to be part of the broadcast. He was on local radio earlier today and not happy, I guess.
Went off a bit.
Yeah, it sounds like he did. And here's the thing about Edmonds. I think he can be, if he really truly applies himself, he really can break down baseball in a good way. He understands the game better than a lot of people. It may not have always been on the broadcast or come through on the broadcast, but he's a really smart baseball person. Jim Edmonds is clearly brilliant when it comes to the game. And there have been times, in my old job, we interviewed him a few times. And when he's breaking down plays, he's pretty good. Pretty good as an analyst, but they're shaking things up. I guess Chip Carey's coming back still. Thompson will be on the broadcast. I don't know if it's an expanded role or what with him, but there's a shakeup there. But here's all you need to know. We're not shaking anything up here at KMOX. We've got, like I said, this is what you call stability. This broadcast team.
I think KMOX in general is what you would call stability. But yeah, I mean, and I know that Jim Edmonds, like we said, went off a bit this morning on the Cardinals organization. Also on the Post-Dispatch, reading STL today, they covered the fact that Jim Edmonds would not be returning to the St. Louis Cardinals telecasts this season. The Post-Dispatch said Edmonds could not be reached for comment. And they talked about his what they call say what's on his mind style that was popular with some fans, also created controversy.
It doesn't work for everybody.
I was talking with Matt Pajeski this morning about this and how the Post-Dispatch brought up when the Chicago Cubs, Christopher Morel, hit a home run and was kind of flashy around the bases. And Edmonds said, quote, "This kid's celebration is a joke. I don't mind saying it at all. I've never seen anything like it. I just don't get it. You are a 229 hitter in the big leagues and you're running around like you're Barry Bonds." And then Chicago radio, I think your
That's
buddies.
Bernstein. They quoted Bernstein.
Yeah. Bernstein did not want to hear from Jim Edmonds.
I agree with Dan on that. I think that's that old school unwritten rules thing. It just comes off like, oh, you're mad he hit a home run off of you. That's what it sounds like. And I do not agree with Edmonds on that at all.
Yeah.
But because the sport is different, and yes, if you're the guy who threw the ball and that ball gets hit for a home run, yeah, you're probably not happy in the moment. And when a hitter is rounding the bases or celebrates or bat flips, yeah, it probably pees you off a little bit. But you got to wear it, dude. Sorry, don't give up a home run and you won't have to do that.
We would love your thoughts on any of this. 314-436-7900. Call or text. Leave us a voice message on the Odyssey app. So, again, I only listen to Rooney and Horton and Klabes. But for Cardinals fans who are watching TV, and Edmonds says that about Morel, does that bother Cardinals fans? Do baseball fans find it petty? Do baseball fans go, yeah, stick it to them? How do Cardinals fans view that?
My guess is, like most fans, they might agree with him in the moment because it's their guy who just gave up a home run, and it gave it up to the Cubs. So in the moment, probably, but I think if it's on the other foot, if the shoe's on the other foot, they're not.
But our Cardinals but fans think, going, hey, I mean, like, that's unnecessary.
I think there are a lot of Cardinals fans who go, eh, you know what? If our guy does it, we're not going to be upset, so we can't be upset with him for doing it against us. At least I would think. Matt Pauly is the host of Sports Open Line here on KMOX and pre- and post-game coverage for Cardinals baseball. Again, listen to all of it this summer on the Odyssey app. Pauly's next.
Yo, Pauly!
Pauly's a great name.
Yo, Pauly!
What'd you do for Pauly? Anything?
Me, Pauly! I was responsible!
Pauly, we're here because of you!
Dude, you are not going to believe this, but pitchers and catchers report a week from Wednesday.
9 days.
Dude, it's coming up.
That's exciting.
Pitchers and catchers reporting to Florida. Our guy Matt Pauly is going to be reporting from Florida pretty soon. I don't know if he's there yet. We'll find out. He's with us now on KMOX. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
When do you go down?
A week from today, next Monday.
Okay. So you're there a couple of days in advance so that you can get the lay of the land?
Sure.
Right.
Yes, I'm there. I'm ready to go. We'll get everything set up on Tuesday. I fly in Monday. Tuesday, we'll get our studio stuff all set up. And Wednesday, pitchers and catchers report.
Are all the renovations done or no? Are they in the middle?
No, they haven't even started.
They haven't started. Oh, well.
No.
So you won't get the benefit of that.
No.
This is quite the project. I mean, they are literally tearing everything down and building it back up. This is, I'll be shocked if they, if it's all the way done when we get there for 2026. I mean, this is a huge project they're going to do.
Okay. Well, it's looking forward. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to see it. Maybe Michael Kelly will let us stay at his place.
There you
go. We
go
down and look. Is that where you stay? Or do you get your
own? No, I do not stay.
He doesn't let you stay there during spring training. That's why he has it.
That's when he goes? Okay.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
I did see him last year at spring training. He took us out for a really nice dinner. It was one of the highlights of last year's spring training.
That guy knows how to go out, doesn't he?
He does. I ate like a king that night.
You should attach yourself to the hip with Michael Kelly and Mike Claiborne, and I feel like you'd be living the high life during spring training.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Claibs a lot, and then got to spend a little bit of time with him. I know the people to hang out with.
Before we get to the baseball stuff, any thoughts on the TV broadcast booth changes?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry.
The broadcast booth on the television side, Jim Edmonds no longer part of it. Any thoughts on that?
No. I mean, those things happen. Those things change for sure. I don't have a big opinion on that.
My question was, the Post-Dispatch, Matt, brought up when Edmonds criticized
Christopher Morel
for kind of showboating around the bases when he hit a home run. And I guess my question is, because I always listen to Rooney and Horton and Klabe, so, you know, I don't know anything. I'm just spitballing here. But anyway, when fans are watching that, do Cardinals fans find that off-putting, or are they like, hey, he's a Cardinal. He's our guy. You can criticize Morel.
I think Edmonds, of all the broadcasters, had the most percentage of people that either loved him or hated him. I don't think he was somebody that people
very
were just
polarizing.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, Edmonds is on the TV broadcasting. That's fine. Like, you either really, really liked him or really, really did not like him, and that's the way it was. There were times where he would say things that I think some of the analysts did not say, but I also think there were times where he said things that other analysts would not say for a reason. So, I think it was a mutual decision from everything I've heard. For people who don't know, he's spending a lot of time in Nashville now. He's got a home and like a farm out there. And he spends, I think, half the time in St. Louis because he still has kids here. And then he spends the other half the time. I'm not trying to like throw out. I'm not tight with Edmonds or anything. Yeah. This is just kind of what I have heard. And that I think it was very much a mutual decision. I don't think he got fired per se, and I don't think he quit per se. I think the two sides just kind of came together and realized, okay, let's go in a different direction.
You know, do you think something like this have anything to do with? And I know it's not the only reason, but if you're, you know, in the tabloids because you were on Real Housewives of Orange County and you've got that as well, does that matter to an organization?
I don't know. That's a really good question because he brought some stuff on, and obviously his personal life was out there. He was on the Real Housewives thing. He's gone through a very, very public divorce, and there's been some details about that divorce that I'm sure, that's the part that stinks about being in the public eye, because the stuff that he has gone through from a divorce standpoint and from a personal life standpoint, many, many, many people go through that exact same thing, but when it becomes public, it doesn't look as good. So I don't know if the Cardinals ever said to themselves that they don't love being associated or attached to that kind of drama. I have no idea. I think it's a legitimate question, Amy. I just don't know what the answer is to it.
In an interview today, he was critical of the organization, saying that they don't allow, or they're not welcoming to former players. Do you get that sort of vibe?
Yeah, I listened to it, and he would know better than me. Like, this is something that's hard for me to comment on because I'm not a red jacket who used to get invited to spring training to be a guest instructor, and I don't get that invite anymore. If that's the way it is, and it's like that way for a lot of former Cardinals, and he specifically said that there was the way they did things pre-COVID and the way they did things post-COVID. And sometimes it's just kind of an oversight, and COVID changed everything, and then you kind of forget to get back to some things. But he also said that he communicated things to the organization and desired to get back to that. So it's a really, really hard. I'm not trying to like hem and haw here. Sure. It's just a hard thing for me to comment on because I don't have any personal connection. Like when we get to spring training, we see Ozzie down there. We see people down there, and I wasn't covering the team pre-COVID. So he specifically mentioned the fact that when he was playing, Bob Gibson or Lou Brock or Stan Musial would be in the clubhouse and sometimes in the dugout during games, and that doesn't really exist anymore. But it's really hard for me to comment on that because I wasn't specifically around during those times.
Well, there's a really great video from last spring training of Ozzie on the field with Nolan Arenado, and they're both mic'd up talking about fielding. And that was a feature, right? I don't remember where the feature aired, but maybe it was on Cardinals website. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was awesome. So it's not like they're not around. I don't know. Again, he's a former player. I'm not there. Maybe his experience was different. I want to talk a little bit about the team itself. And this is about the time where projections start to come out. And some people like to look at projections. Some people do not. It's always a grain of salt kind of thing, and Baseball Prospectus does their Pecota projections, so they try to predict what players individually will do, what teams will do. They have concluded the Cardinals will finish with about 78 wins and in third place in the division behind the Cubs and then the Brewers. How do you feel about that Pecota projection?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I would say that's the floor for the team. This team probably wins somewhere between the 78 and mid 80s. I think that's what it looks like. If they get into the mid to high 80s, maybe we're talking about a team that sneaks into the playoffs. Who knows? If the division is terrible, maybe they win the division. I don't think that's a terrible projection for this team. In fact, with so many unknowns, I like that projection because Pecota doesn't deal in unknowns. They deal with knowns. So they can't include into their projection the idea of Jordan Walker taking a big step forward, the idea of Nolan Gorman. Maybe Nolan Gorman's a bad example because he's got significant time in the big leagues. But there are things on this team that they can't project. So if they are projecting based off what they already know, what that tells me is if you do get a couple, two, three guys who take those big steps forward, then you're taking a big step forward from what that projection is. So that would be my spin on it.
The Cubs with 90 wins about, that's what they're projecting. You agree with that?
No, I don't. I don't at all. And now I'll reserve the right to watch and see if the Cubs make another move. I don't think they've done enough. I don't think that I was expecting them to do a lot more, honestly. I've been if I was a Cubs fan, I would be incredibly disappointed in this offseason, especially when Craig Counsell is saying towards the end of last year that, we have to make the moves to become a 90-win team. You don't say that as a manager unless you feel like the organization is going to go do that. And yeah, they brought in Tucker, and that's a really good addition. I'm not being dismissive of him whatsoever, but that's kind of the one thing that they've done. They have a new closer in Presley. But I don't know. I don't think the Cubs are a 90-win team.
All right. The Cardinals, do you suspect, maybe we're, what, 9 days away from spring training? Anything with Arenado? Or do you think that they're just going to start the season with him?
I still think it depends on Alex Bregman. If Bregman signs with a team that's not the Boston Red Sox, I think there's a pretty good chance that Arenado ends up in Boston. If that doesn't happen, then there's at least a 50-50 chance that he's in spring training with the Cardinals. And it's going, you know, John Mozeliak was on with Tom Ackerman on Sports on a Sunday morning, and he admitted that the market for the trade market had really died down here recently. Mo told me during a winter warm-up weekend that he felt like, you know, outside forces were impacting it. So outside forces is the Bregman thing. So it's very hard to evaluate the possibility of Arenado being a Cardinal or not being a Cardinal when Bregman is still hanging out there. The moment he signs, I think that's the moment that we start to get more of a real firm grasp on whether or not it's a legit possibility that Arenado starts the season with the Cardinals.
Tigers are still, you know, interested in Bregman. Apparently they just signed Jack Flaherty, so he's going back. Yeah. He's going back to Detroit. Couple of years for him. You have thoughts on that deal?
Yeah, so I think from a money perspective, it was actually a really good deal. When you look at what is going on across baseball and the amount of money that's being spent. So Flaherty got a two-year deal. He's got an opt-out after the first year. So essentially, it's a one-year deal with an option. He's going to make $25 million in 2025, has a $10 million player option for 26. That goes to $20 million if he starts 15 games. So he can suck totally and just start 15 games, and he's still going to make an extra $10 million off that. So we'll see whether or not he picks up the second deal. But when you consider that Matthew Boyd got 2 years, $29 million with a $1 million incentive on his contract. Luis Severino got 3 years, $67 million. Frankie Montas, 2 years, $34 million. If you give Flaherty this two-year deal and that money, I think you compare that to what else has been going on in the market, and you say that's a really, really good deal for Flaherty.
Hey, I want to get to Super Bowl week here with you in a moment, but I mean, how much do you pay attention to the NBA? There was a massive trade yesterday with Luka Doncic going to the Lakers and Dallas getting Anthony Davis. So Luka is going to be playing with LeBron. What are your thoughts on that one?
It says a lot about the NBA right now. It says a lot about Doncic's relationship with the Mavericks. They've kind of trashed him on the way out, talking about his defense. There's been a lot of talk about whether or not he was committed to things. There's a video out there on social media where he was drinking a beer after a game one day.
It was after the conference final.
Yeah, was it Michael Finley, who's their assistant GM, went over and took the beer away from him?
Yeah.
So obviously the relationship between Doncic and the Mavericks had gone to a place that they didn't want it to go. We'll see how he fits in on the Lakers. If he's out of shape and can't play defense, that doesn't really help you that much, but we still know that he's an all-time great kind of player, and maybe it was just time for everybody to move on. I don't know if the Mavericks get better. Like, with all due respect to Anthony Davis, I'm not sure Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving as the centerpieces of a team doesn't seem like a championship team to me, but what do I know?
I will say, if you the Twitterverse occasionally comes up big, and it usually does on things like this, and people were explaining the Doncic trade in different terms and music, or one person said girl terms, which take that for what it's worth, but they said it's like Destiny Child trading Beyonce to TLC for Chili.
Wait, for Chili?
I guess that's one of the TLC members.
Yes.
Basically, you don't trade Beyonce to TLC. Like, people have just been giving, one was another, trading post-emo Billy Corgan for something. Like, they're putting it in different terms of music and movies and celebrity. It was pretty good.
This is the first time I ever knew that one of the singer's names from TLC was Chili.
Oh, yeah. Left Eye, she's dead.
Yeah.
She burned down, was it Andre Rison's house?
Andre Rison's house, yeah. They do Waterfalls, right? That's their banger?
Yeah,
right?
Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls.
Yeah, that's a good song. It's a really good song.
T-Boz. That was the other person.
Who did Scrubs? Was TLC Scrubs?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay,
I don't want no Scrubs.
That's a good song. Yeah.
But like you said, did you know the name of anyone in TLC?
Nope.
But you know Beyonce.
I know Beyonce.
That's right.
She just won a country thing, right?
She did.
She certainly did. Yeah.
So someone goes, there's no NFL comparison to this, but if I were forced to make one, here's the correct one. It would be the Bills trading Josh Allen during the 22 season, the season after the 13-second game from Matt Stafford and a future first. That was his NFL comparison.
Any thoughts, Matt, on Super Bowl week? This is I've always loved Super Bowl week, and especially if you get to be there. If you got to be in New Orleans this week, that is the place to be in the U.S. So as we get ready for the Chiefs and the Eagles on Sunday, any thoughts?
I think the Chiefs win. I think it's a close game. Fun week. You're right. Like, there's parties every night. Like, people who do the Super Bowl in a big way, I look up to them because that is the place to be, like you said.
Matt, do you think Saquon Barkley is going to have a great game no matter what?
I don't know.
Yes.
Why?
Because I love him. Because I'm cheering. I'm rooting for the Chiefs, but I really like Saquon Barkley.
Why do you like Saquon Barkley?
Because he's amazing. He's fun.
Okay.
Seems like an all right dude.
You don't even know. He does seem like an all right dude.
He seems like an all right dude. Yeah. He does. And then that where he could have
He's got a cool name, Saquon.
Saquon's a great name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First and last name just flows. Saquon Barkley is a great sports name.
Such a great name, and he's amazing. He's fun to watch.
Is SB going to win the SB?
Wow. All right.
Well, Saquon Barkley. MVP in the SB.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, the Chiefs are going to win, but Saquon Barkley is amazing.
So, Matt, Paulie, Sports Open line tonight starting at 6 o'clock. You'll go until 7. Then it's the women's SLU Women's Basketball Coaches Show. They will go from 7 until 8 o'clock. You got a guest list yet?
Not yet. We'll see what gets put together between now and 6 o'clock. We got time. Time to figure stuff out.
Matt, Paulie, we'll talk to you Wednesday.
All right.
Yo, Paulie, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
Sports Open Line tonight, 6 to 7 o'clock, and then it is the Women's Coaches Show, St. Louis University. Amy and I were at St. Louis University on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie, he was on the show with us. Didn't go great for him Friday night.
I think you made him uncomfortable.
But
I think he was at ease, and then you put him ill at ease.
No. Because Hannah Wallace was on later in the show, and then she goes out on Saturday.
Crushed it.
And sets a personal record of at least a SLU high mark for her of rebounds. She had a good game. So.
Well, I think Robbie was uncomfortable after talking to you.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm uncomfortable now.
So am I.
I'm Chris Ranji. This is KMOX. Dude, it's Monday, which means it's time for Monday Regrets.
Oh, yeah.
All day, where we're taking your Monday regrets. What do you regret from the weekend or the past week? Tell us what you've done. Tell us what you've done or what you didn't do. And you were supposed to get done, and people are mad at you as a result of it. Whatever it is, get us your Monday regret today.
And they can be timely regrets, as Ranj mentioned, over the weekend. Or it could be like a regret that you've
just
had
been
your
eating
whole
away
life.
At you.
It's been eating away at you. That's what we do, is we provide a public service
so
that you can get it off your chest.
You can text us with it, 314-436-7900, or send us a voice message. We love to get your voice messages, and you can do that directly from the Odyssey app.
Guess what else?
What's that?
Guess why people need to keep listening, other than the fact that it's a great show.
Tell me.
We are giving away Outlaw Festival tickets.
Well, yes, but not today. We're starting tomorrow, guys. We are giving away tickets.
Okay.
Tomorrow
that
through the rest of the week.
That could have been a surprise that we could have told them in the next hour.
Yeah, but you have to keep listening.
I would have divulged. I would have divulged that piece of information in the next
guys,
hour.
This is why you read the emails.
I read the rundown.
Well, it does say on the rundown.
It does say
we're giving away Outlaw Festival tickets.
Yeah.
So in that regard, you're not wrong. But we're actually giving away tickets tomorrow.
It's interesting.
Wednesday,
that we start
Thursday,
them on Tuesday,
Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how the golf expo was.
I'm sure it was fantastic. We gave away golf expo tickets all week last
Pretty
week.
Pretty golfy.
Yeah, because we care about you. We love to give you stuff. But the Outlaw Festival with Bob Dylan and Willie Nelson, yeah. Hollywood Casino Amphitheater is on June 28th. But we're going to have tickets all week starting tomorrow to give away to you. What do you think of that, Amy?
I think it's great. I do wonder if Willie Nelson's son, Lucas Nelson, will be there.
You really are into him.
Yeah, Lucas Nelson's great. I will say this. Do you ever love a band or a singer-songwriter?
Never.
And then they start shifting the type of music that they're doing, and you're like, no, no, please don't go this way, and then you don't like them anymore?
I can't think of an example, but yes.
So
I'm sure of it. I'm sure it's happened.
Lucas Nelson and the Promise of the Real, just a few stars apart, that album, his self-titled album, were great. He is starting to move to super kitschy and like, ba-dum-ba-dum, I drink my alcohol and I love, love my okay. alcohol. I'm not even joking. He has a song called Alcohol-a-luia. That's what it is. And it's like, Alcohol-a-luia. And it's so kitschy. Guys, that's my regret.
Maybe it's just that one song.
No, it's the album. I haven't listened to his last two albums or last album.
I honestly don't know any of his stuff.
Well, now you don't need to know his new stuff. It's actually making me very sad. I don't think I would go to a concert with him. Just him. I don't know.
Also,
unless he sang his old stuff, too.
Also, I'm surprised to learn.
Yeah.
Maybe not surprised, but I didn't know that Willie Nelson has 7 kids.
Yeah.
Dude, that's so many kids. 7.
How many wives?
I think just one.
Is she the mother of all of them?
I think so.
Because it's different if you do it that way. Unlike Tyreek Hill, who had 9 kids this year alone.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Fireworks with the Board of Aldermen in St. Louis. Oh, man, it was a show on Friday. Sean Malone saw it. He's going to join us. And the people were being accused of being drunk. We got the Board of Aldermen president leaving. Oh, man. Insane. We're going to talk to Sean Malone next on KMOX.